I'm joined on Radio Jackie today by the Liberal Democrats MP for Epsom and Yule, Helen Maguire. Jumping straight in, I want to start with Heathrow expansion. So the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, announced the government's backing of a third runway at Heathrow Airport. What was your reaction to this announcement?
Well, I think what's really frustrating is that the Chancellor has done this on the back of economic growth. And, you know, we need to gain some evidence that economic growth is actually going to happen as a result of Heathrow Airport expansion. And I'm not clear that that's actually necessarily going to happen. And I think that it'd be helpful if the Chancellor, you know, started listening to the Liberal Democrats a bit more about rebuilding our relationship with Europe. Because I think if this country wants economic growth, that's what we've got to be doing. And we've got to be relooking at the hike in national insurance that this Chancellor has imposed on so many charities and businesses. But, you know, look, this government has sort of, this is what they've said that they want to do. So what I need to do now is to go back to my constituents in Epsom and Yule and see how they think it's going to affect them. And what we really need this government to do is to do a full impact assessment to address the concerns of my constituents.
Yeah, what impact do you foresee for Epsom and Yule residents?
Well, I mean, this is it, because obviously when an airport expands, you know, we don't know how the flight paths are going to change. So are they going to get more noise? Is there going to be more pollution? You know, what environmental impact is there going to be? You know, on the other side, there could be job creation. You know, is there actually going to be job creation? Is it going to help my constituents or not? So I think this is what we really like to understand. We want to really understand the balance between the two, you know, the environmental impact and the economic impact. Or is it just that they'll get everything negative and no benefits? I don't know. And that's why, you know, I'm calling for a real assessment to understand how it's going to impact my constituents.
You just touched on my next question there. How do you balance economic benefits with environmental concerns?
It is a difficult balancing act. I mean, I know that one of the things that the aviation industry are doing at the moment is obviously they're developing, you know, sustainable aviation fuel and, you know, the technology is improving there. And that's great. And obviously that's what this government should be doing, is helping, you know, that the aviation industry improve so it can, you know, be more green. But until we get to that point, you know, we've got to obviously recognise where we are. Yes, people need jobs. You know, we absolutely appreciate that. But it's got to go hand in hand, you know, with making sure that we don't increase carbon emissions in the environment as well. And also the noise impact, you know, that's, it's, you know, thankfully it doesn't affect my constituents as much as it does people in Twickenham, for example. But we have to recognise that, you know, this is an impact to people's lives. So
does the expansion align with the UK's net zero commitments?
Well, look, I don't have an assessment on that. I mean, that's for the government to do. They need to do a full assessment of this and see whether it's going to impact it or not. But obviously, I would be concerned as an environmentalist as to whether it is or not. But this is for the government to go back and see whether it will actually help us meet our net zero goals or not.
And how will you engage with your constituents on this issue and their concerns?
So we've had a number of constituents email already just to express their views, you know, one way or another. And as I do on a weekly basis, I'm going out and about and talking to people on the doorstep. And we'll see, you know, if it's raised, and if it is raised, what they say about it, and, you know, whether they're for or against it.
And what steps will you take in Parliament to oppose the expansion?
Well, again, we'll be questioning, you know, exactly if this is going to achieve the economic growth that Rachel Reeves thinks it's going to achieve. You know, we want a full assessment as to what she thinks the expansion's going to achieve, and a full assessment of the environmental impact. So we'll be pressing the Chancellor to find out more information on this.
Next thing I want to talk about is pushing back county elections by 12 months. Do you support or oppose this delay, and why?
We absolutely oppose it. And I think what I would say is that Surrey County Council is the only county council where they actually haven't specifically stated that there will be elections in 2026. I mean, we're looking at it, it's highly likely they could be delayed until 27. And I think what's so frustrating is that so many of my residents on a weekly basis that I'm speaking to are absolutely fed up with the Conservative financial mismanagement of Surrey. But it's not just that. We've got parents who are emailing us every single week about their children who have special educational needs, and the challenges that they're having and the challenges that they're having getting their children into school. You know, and this is at a time, this is coming, this cancellation of these elections, when when Surrey County Council have raised council tax to the absolute maximum, 4.99%, whilst also racking up 5.5 billion in debt. And as I mentioned about special educational needs, Surrey has the highest number of tribunals related to special educational needs. And from my perspective, it just simply looks like they're desperately trying to cover up their abysmal record. And, and they're silencing the voices of my constituents in Epsom, Muir, Ashdead and Leatherhead. And it's also at a time where, since the general election, the Liberal Democrats in Surrey, we made sweeping gains. We won half of the Surrey MP seats. And so, for the local people, it just feels like it's democracy denied at a time when they are frustrated about potholes, frustrated about send, frustrated about policing, and they don't have an opportunity to let their voices be heard.
Yeah, that was my next question. How does this impact local democracy and voters' trust as well?
Well, I think this is this. I mean, Surrey County Council now been in power for 5 years. It'll be another 2 years. But also we're allowing the people who have, enabled this racking up of debt to actually lead the process of devolution. And we just don't think that's right. The democracy is allowing local people to actually have their voice heard. And right now that's been cancelled. We've said, no, you can't have your voice, and you can't have your voice maybe for a year, maybe for 2 years. So that's incredibly frustrating. So I, with my, Liberal Democrat colleagues, Al Pinkerton, Chris Coughlan, Monica Harding, Will Forster and Zoe Franklin, alongside the leader of the opposition, Councillor Paul Fellows, will be continuing to be local champions and continuing to stand up for what matters for residents here in Surrey.
Will this set a precedent for future election delays, do you think?
Well, I hope not. I mean, I hope that once this devolution is done, then that will be it, and then we'll get back to a regular cycle of elections. But obviously, until the devolution is sorted, we don't know. So we're all sort of waiting to find out. But I think the sooner that we can get some certainty on when the next elections will take place, the better.
And what's your message to voters frustrated by the postponement?
I would contact your Surrey County councillors, I would contact your MPs, and I would voice your frustration.
Moving on to the online crime agency wanted to protect shoppers in Epsom and Yule. Why do you think shoppers in your constituency need more protection online?
I think it's so online, obviously, when people are purchasing goods, it can be very difficult. It's very difficult to know if when you're purchasing off a particular website and whether that website is legitimate or not. So that's incredibly difficult to know. And I know a number of people who have, purchased goods through websites that are fraudulent and then have had great difficulty actually getting their funds back. So I met with Mark Chapman, the Divisional Command Free Surrey, to discuss my concerns the other day. But it's not just that online. It's also having the ability to be able to report things online with the police as well. And we know that in Surrey, we're talking about 1,000 different cases of online shopping fraud last year. The total losses of that are 848,000. So that's a huge amount. So we've got to find a way to be able to tackle this online crime. I think for many people, it's difficult to see what is a legitimate website and what isn't. I mean, the fraudsters nowadays are so good at sort of making things look legitimate that even those of us that think, we're reasonably sort of tech savvy, can get caught out as well.
Yeah, you mentioned being able to report things online there. How else would an online crime agency improve consumer safety?
Well, I think there just needs to be like a public awareness campaign. That's what the police should do. Perhaps they can do it in shopping centres, talking to people as well to help them look out for, the telltale signs of, what might be sort of an intimidation website, so that they can see. I mean, I think, most of us nowadays can, when we get a call, for example, a phone call from potentially a legitimate phone caller that's, pretending to be HMRC or whoever, we pick up on it quite quickly and we put the phone down. I think for some people, it's a lot harder to know whether it's a legitimate website or not. So I think getting some tips from the police would be really helpful for people. Perhaps a leaflet or something, an awareness campaign would really help local constituents to understand what they should be looking out for so they don't fall into the trap of, using a fraudulent online website.
And what immediate steps can residents take today to avoid online fraud?
Well, I think, I'm not a obviously online fraud expert, but I think it's just doing some research into the websites and the companies before you actually purchase online and make sure it is the correct URL that you're using. Making sure that when you press the URL link, it doesn't take you to another hidden website, which I know can sometimes happen. And just making sure that you're, hopefully using reliable brands that you're already aware of, perhaps, avoiding some of the ones that, you're not sure if legitimate or not.
Moving on to the water bills rise, why do you believe the 31% water bill increase is unfair to residents in Epsom and Ewell?
Well, first of all, I don't think anyone wants a 31% increase in their water bills. But look, it's absolutely outrageous. The government's basically given them free rein to increase the bills, and this is at a time when people are feeling the cost of living squeeze, and at a time when Thames Water is doing disastrously, and they're not doing what they should be doing, and they're not fixing the leaks, they're still polluting our rivers and streams, like the River Mole and the Hogs Mill. And it's absolutely shameful that this government and the Conservatives voted down our Lib Dem amendment to the Water Special Measures Bill that would stop our constituents from paying the price for these water bosses' failures. And it simply cannot go on. And I was pleased to join my fellow Lib Dem MPs in supporting Charlie Maynard MP in his evidence to the High Court on behalf of Thames Water's 16 million customers. What we have to recognise here is that a third of this of our bills is going towards servicing the debt, and Thames Water are now looking to take on an additional £3 billion of debt when they are failing horribly. And this would mean our bills going even higher, and this is just simply unacceptable.
So what actions are you calling on the government to take in response to this rise in water bills?
Well, as I mentioned, we had the Water Special Measures Bill, and this is exactly what we did. We put forward amendments that would stop this from happening. But unfortunately, both the government and the Conservatives voted down our amendments. But we will continue to speak up for constituents. I'll continue to speak up for my constituents about Thames Water. And as I mentioned, there's a High Court hearing going on at the moment, and our MPs will continue to challenge Thames Water there.
And how do you think this price hike will affect local families and businesses in your area?
It's going to be really hard. I mean, look, at the moment, what we're seeing is energy prices going up. We're seeing water bills going up. We're now seeing council tax bills going up. And this is at a time when people are really feeling the crunch. So it's really going to affect people massively. And I mean, I help out at a local food bank, and it will be interesting to see in the next month or so, if we start to see more clients coming in as a result of this. But it's just going to affect all of our pockets.
Moving on to the bill providing compensation for WASPI women. What convinced you to vote for the bill offering compensation for these women?
So I've been supporting the call for compensation for WASPI women, since I became a candidate before the election. It's a gross injustice that's been faced by, in Epsom Newell, 5,420 people. And I think what's interesting is it wasn't just supported by Liberal Democrats candidates and MPs, but also by Labour representatives. And also the Prime Minister himself. They pledged to deliver fair compensation to those impacted by these changes that the women simply had no control over. So it's absolutely devastating that they've basically made a political choice to break this promise, and most importantly, ignore the findings of the independent watchdog. The independent watchdog that said that you need to give these WASPI women some compensation. So it's incredibly frustrating. It's incredibly disappointing. And all we're asking for is fairness. They had no control over the change in the retirement age. I'll continue to stand up for the WASPI women and fight for the injustice and fight for the injustice that they received.
How do you think the failure to properly inform women about pension age changes has impacted them?
Well, they haven't been able to plan. I mean, this is the challenge. I mean, we've had countless emails about their inability to plan. Everyone plans until a certain retirement age. So suddenly, if that retirement age has changed and you weren't aware of it, then we had one constituent, for example, who's messaged us, and she's had to go back to work because she doesn't have enough savings. Now, many of us will know that as you get older, it can be harder to find that work. And these are women who are already in their 60s and you have to go back just to basically make ends meet. So we've heard some really devastating stories about how challenging it is for them, and actually, when we had the Westminster Hall debate the other day. There was a constituent from Epsom Newell who was there, you know, just listening to what was going on, and just so incredibly frustrated because it's really hitting their pockets at a time, as we've just mentioned, when all the bills are going up. You know, your water bills are going up, your council tax is going up, and it's just going to make it incredibly hard for them.
And what do you hope this compensation will achieve for those affected?
Well, I think this is the challenge, is that they've been denied compensation, so they don't have it. But you know, any compensation, whatever it would have been, would have certainly helped them into retirement. But now they've been completely denied compensation.
And the final topic is shocking new NHP delay trust and site data. Why is the delay in NHS trust data so concerning for local healthcare?
Well, I mean, obviously, with data, we need to know exactly what's going on locally. If we don't know what's going on locally, then we can't fix anything. You know, so it's really important for that. But I think what's most devastating at the moment for my constituents in Epsom and Newell is the 10-year delay to the building of the new hospital, which is absolutely shocking. And you know, and since then, we haven't heard anything from the government about how they're going to help the local hospitals with the massive amount of repairs that they've got. And obviously this is going to have a massive impact on the hospital's ability to help local residents with their healthcare. So, you know, it's absolutely devastating. And I've been calling for the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care to publish a full impact assessment to help understand what this delay is going to mean for the area.
Yeah, that was my next question. How do you think this will affect patient care in Epsom and Newell?
Massively. I mean, you've got ceilings that are falling in, which then mean that storerooms or beds are unusable. I mean, we were just at St Helier the other day, and there was a tarpaulin going into a corridor with a funnel because of the leaking roof. So money that could actually go on patient care is actually being spent on trying to keep the building going. So it's going to have a massive impact. It will mean that they can't spend as much on patient care because they're spending it on propping up a building that's no longer fit for purpose. But I had conversations with the managing director of the hospitals and of the trust, and they were just going to go away and sort of figure everything out. But it's absolutely devastating. And this is, it's not even a 2 or 3 year delay. This is a 10 year delay. You know, and we know that they've got £44 million worth of repairs that are needed. And of those, 46% have been identified as high risk. So I'm concerned that actually services are not, you know, are only going to get worse, not better, because they're operating in buildings that are just simply not fit for purpose.
What should the government do to address these delays and issues?
Well, obviously, they've said they haven't got the money to build the new hospital right now. So what I've been asking for is an impact assessment to know, you know, to know exactly how that's going to affect people locally. And we also need to know if they're going to have the funding to actually repair the building so that they are up to standard, so they can actually operate effectively. So I think once we know a little bit more about that, then obviously it will enable the Hospital Trust to actually better plan for my constituents.
With regards to devolution, Tim Oliver, leader of Surrey County Council, said, "Now we've received confirmation that Surrey is in the first wave of local government reorganisation. We will develop a business case for reorganisation and submit a draft to government in March. Arrangements will be made to postpone local elections in May so the detailed work for reorganisation and devolution can take place. The resource and time that would have been spent on elections for a soon-to-be-abolished council can now be directed to working on the best possible outcome of reorganisation for Surrey. I can be absolutely clear that throughout this process, our vital work supporting residents will continue. Services will be delivered and we will still be here for those who need us most until whatever new council is fully established to take on that delivery. I've always been a firm believer that further devolution from Westminster to local regions and communities would be in the best interest of Surrey residents and businesses. Of course, any proposal will now need to be worked up in collaboration with local government and other partners across the county so that together we can really grasp this opportunity to deliver something meaningful for the future of Surrey. We'll keep residents and staff updated every step of the way."